This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Social media can feel like a perilous activity for kids to navigate, but it can actually be a powerful and positive experience when used correctly. So says my guest today. Jamie Barton is head teacher of the Jewellery Quarter Academy and has a wealth of tips and suggestions for parents trying to keep their children safe online. Welcome back to Brummy Mummies. My name is Zoe Chamberlain. I'm a journalist, author and mum. I launched Brummy Mummies as a community for families to share with you stories from the most inspiring mums and dads to help you find out how they juggle family life and everything that comes with it. Jamie is a dad himself, and he says the key to social media is to be creative and kind when interacting with others. Let's get straight into talking to Jamie. Hi, Jamie. Thanks for joining us on the podcast again.
You're welcome. It's good to be back.
Great stuff. So today we're going to talk all about social media. And I know it can be a bit of a headache for parents, and I would imagine teachers as well. I know you've written something about social media kindness, and I love that idea. Could you share some of your tips on how parents can encourage good, positive use of social media?
Yeah, sure. So I think the first thing that I'd say to parents, I'm a parent myself, I've got three little ones who, two of them who love social media. I think the clear thing first of all is about setting boundaries and establishing those guidelines for how your child can use social media, and that also probably includes about how much time they're allowed to spend on it and when they're allowed to use it as well. For some parents, it can be a bit of a struggle of an evening to kind of get students to relinquish their phones. But I'd also say to parents, monitor the online activity. I do this. It's important to regularly check in on your child's social media accounts, ensure they're not engaging in any harmful or inappropriate posts or behaviour. And I think we talked about kindness there, encouraging positive online behaviour. Teaching your child the importance of treating others with kindness and with respect online. Discouraging them from maybe participating in cyberbullying or spreading rumours about other students or just generally being unkind. I think that's a really important message to give to our children. And then, of course, there's the online safety element of things. It's really important that children are taught how to protect their personal information online and the potential risks of oversharing and sharing too much information online. I think as a parent, it's hard sometimes, but we have to be that role model with our phones in particular. And it's almost teaching and modelling and demonstrating to our children how to use social media responsibly by practicing, promoting and modelling good online behaviour yourself. And I think the other thing that I'd say to parents is a healthy balance is really important. Real life socialising is just so much more valuable than social media. It's absolutely vital that we encourage our children to spend time interacting with friends and family in person rather than just via a screen and online solely, I think. And that healthy balance is really important. But underpinning all of this, I'd say openness and honest conversations are absolutely vital. Talk to your child about their social media use. Be open to answering any questions. And we're not the experts. Parents are never the experts. You know, you don't get given a parenting qualification when you first have your little ones. And I think we're all learning as we go. And I think there's no harm in saying, you know what, I don't know the answer to that one, but I'll find out and come back to you. And the last thing I'd probably say is keep their age in mind at all times. A lot of social media sites have age restrictions, and it's important that we adhere to that, and we encourage our children to adhere to that as well.
That's really interesting what you're saying about modelling social media behaviour ourselves. Would you actually show your children your social media feeds, your own personal ones, to show them what you do and how you use social media?
I think it does have some benefits. As teachers and schools, we use social media as a really powerful tool for communication and collaboration. And we connect with other schools, with parents and other students as well. And other educators on platforms such as Twitter. Some schools, some teachers use social media to share resources and information with students. I've seen schools across the country that have like a class website or a blog. And I think showcasing some of this is important, because I think some of our children probably see social media as exactly that, to be social with friends. And there's certainly a time and a place for that. But I think there's so many ways that social media can be used for learning and for the advancement of knowledge. I saw a great tweet the other day that talked about how YouTube is the best university. And many of our children love spending some time on YouTube to watch videos of their favourite YouTubers. But how many of them are actually nudged and encouraged to go and look at something that maybe they're studying in class at the moment, maybe that could be stretching their knowledge or building their curiosity on a particular topic? And I think some teachers as well, but certainly teachers that maybe pastoral leads in school, I look at heads of year and non-teaching pastoral staff, and I think actually they probably have concerns about the negative effects of social media on students, cyberbullying in particular. And I think that can be something that parents would absolutely have to guard against and support their children to be able to understand more about. Teachers, in my experience, have used their social media to expand their own professional learning networks. I've done that quite well, and it's enabled me to collaborate with others and find new ideas. And I think our children tend to be very social minded, and I see, you know, through gaming, a lot of my children, or certainly the children at this school, and also as well my own ones. They tend to have almost friend gaming networks in that way, where they share tips and ways they can get better on certain games. Who's not to say that can't be a really transferable skill for reaching out to others and expanding their knowledge around different areas of the curriculum, and certainly a skill as they get older and become university students. Reaching out into the world and finding ideas and inspiration is absolutely something that social media is a real you know, plus point of social media.
Yes, I mean, you only have to look on YouTube at Mr. Salis with his GCSE English and corporate maths, and if you want to learn how to play a musical instrument, it's all there, isn't it? So there is a really positive, powerful side of it. What have been some of the more negative experiences you've found of social media as a teacher?
I think some of the things that we've seen are around students misusing social media and generally being unkind. I think one of the things that we say to students here is pause before posting, and if it's not kind, don't post it. And I think where there have been occasions where that's been something that has caused a disagreement between groups of friends, it can cause mistrust, it can cause anxiety. So we see young people can have increased anxiety when people do post negative things. And I think what we do say to people is let's try and be as positive as possible. Let's try and be as kind as possible. We had a really good drive recently where we talked about, are you someone that's positive, or are you someone that's negative towards others? Do you add to others, or do you detract, and do you subtract from them? And I quite like that simplicity of thinking about it. But I think we've seen an explosion in mental health issues amongst young people. And some of that is linked to the way that that unfortunately some young people are towards each other on social media.
Yes, that's a shame. So I know the guidelines for social media accounts say that children should be a minimum of 13 years old. You have touched upon this, but we all know that a lot of kids do fake their birth dates so that they can have an account. What would you say to parents who's perhaps 11 or 12 year olds asking for an account just so that they can keep up with peer pressure?
I think the guidelines for social media accounts are that children should be a minimum of 13 years old, and that's the case on most sites. I think it's important for parents to consider the risks of social media use of children at that age. Obviously, there's exposure to inappropriate content, cyberbullying that I've already talked about as well, and obviously the threat of online predatory behaviours. It might be appropriate to set strict rules and restrictions on their account usage, closely monitor the activity. Ultimately, the decision on whether to allow a child to have a social media account is quite a personal one that should be made by the parent and guardian. And taking into account the child's maturity level and individual circumstances. I think the monitoring is really key. I'd say some tips I'd give to parents whose children have done that, because I think it's quite difficult, isn't it? Once you put a blanket ban on things, it makes children want to do it even more to a certain extent.
Yes.
And so I think where parents are facing that struggle, I'd say that monitoring is probably the best way to go forward. Friending or following their child. Parents, they don't have to accept it, but parents can request to be friends or sometimes follow their child on social media platforms that they use. And that gives us the privilege or the opportunity to see their child's posts, comments, interactions as well. Some parents have set up parental controls. And some social media platforms have those inbuilt parental controls. I think TikTok has recently adopted that as well. And that lets parents restrict access to certain features, limit screen time, and receive notifications when their child attempts to sometimes access blocked content. I know that YouTube has a feature that is quite useful. I think I spoke before about open and honest conversations. It's important for parents to have those conversations about online safety and if children are going to use it, how they can be responsible digital citizens. For the more extreme measures might be to use monitoring software. There are those options that parents can use to track their child's activity across different platforms. And I've seen that done on phones before where parents have had access to text messages, call logs, location data. But I think that's not that common. And I think the main thing that I'd say to parents around this is you've got to educate yourselves on it. It's important that parents have a good, because we're from a different generation to our young people. It's important that parents have a good grasp of the different social media platforms and the risks associated with them. Some schools that I've seen have done really good kind of summaries of the different social media platforms, their age restrictions, the potential risks around them. And that really helps parents to make an informed choice about what's appropriate for their child to use or not. And I think if you do want more information about that, I'd get in touch with my child's school and speak to the safeguarding lead and say, I just want a bit more advice about this particular platform. And that's what the professionals are there to do. They're there to help parents become a bit more educated around, which for me is a brave new world.
That's a good thing to know. That's not something I would have thought to do. So you mentioned about cyberbullying. I think that's really hard I think bullying is hard for any child, but cyberbullying, you can't escape it even when you're in your own home. So what would be your advice if a child is suffering that or perhaps their friend is going through that?
So I'd say that being bullied online is a really difficult and traumatic experience for children. Like you said, it can be quite invasive because it's almost inescapable once it's in on your device and in your home in that way. And it can feel like that. But if a child's been bullied online, I think there are some steps that they can take to try and protect themselves and prevent. First of all, I'd say save the evidence. There's a lot of times in schools in particular where pastoral staff are investigating and trying to get to the bottom of bullying. And I'd say children should save any messages, comments, posts that really evidence bullying. And I know that's quite hard to do because it can be sometimes difficult to revisit, but it can be used as evidence to report the bullying, both to the school and also to the social media platform itself. And I think the first thing to say, as well as kind of saving the evidence is start by telling someone. There's always a trusted adult in school that children should be able to go to. Tell parents or whoever's at home about the bullying. I also think there's merit in speaking to the social media platform as well, if they feel comfortable in doing so. And it might be that they require the assistance of an adult to do that. But more and more so now, because of the prevalence of online abuse, and also as well how high profile that can be. And I think it's in some cases that's raised awareness of the fact that social media platforms have to do more to protect people. Social media platforms are more open to receiving these reports and do take action. Of course, you can block the person that's doing the posts and the abuse, and I think that is a good step to take, because it prevents people from having that access to you and continuing to contact you as well. Children nowadays, more so than ever, seem to be addicted to the mobile phones. So I'd say taking a break from social media is a good thing that some high profile celebrities have modelled recently as well, where there's been some quite high profile online abuse. You have seen some celebrities that have said, actually, I'm taking a break from social media for a while because I need to protect my mental health. I think Tom Holland did that recently, the star of the Spider-Man films. And I think that was good that we saw someone that young people know and obviously are fans of modelling that behaviour as well. And I think children should seek support. They've got to reach out to people, whether they've got people at school who can support them with the emotional impact of being bullied, whether that's professional counselling and support in some instances that's required. I think society is far more open now to and accepting of that idea of seeking support and having that access to people that can help you to heal in that respect. I think it's also important for parents to be aware of the signs of bullying. And I think schools and parents need to take reports of bullying super seriously. They've got to be supportive of children and work with them to make sure that they feel safe and supported as well. I think in a lot of ways, online abuse can be quite traumatic and difficult to deal with. And reassuring as well, because I think sometimes victims of bullying can believe that it's their fault. And I think it's important that they understand that they shouldn't feel ashamed or blame themselves for the behaviour of the bully. And I've seen it in really good practice when bullying's been addressed in schools as well, where the perpetrator of the bullying has actually had that level of support to unpick what it is that's caused them to act in that way, which has been really, really strong practice.
So what would be some of the signs that parents should look out for of their child being bullied?
I think that there's visible signs that might be quite obvious. A change in behaviour, being visibly upset, a kind of a reluctance to maybe go to school if that's something that is coming from a classmate or a peer potentially. But also, I'd say not more so rather than the kind of obvious visible ones, the withdrawal is something that I think is also really, really interesting for parents to see. Maybe there's a noticeable change in behavior. Maybe there's a noticeable change in appearance, that is a result of pressure. And I think parents spend the most of the, you know, the kids spend most of their time at home with their parents. And I think it's absolutely vital that we look for these signs, and we just make sure that we've got a real keen eye for noticing any changes or any differences in our children.
That was really interesting what you were saying about actually working with the child who's done the bullying as well. Do you think sometimes that things can escalate on social media and kids don't realise that they have actually started a bit of a chain of events of bullying? Because sometimes it can just be a thoughtless comment that goes up on something and then it has lots of traction and suddenly it feels like a kind of a mountain of abuse.
Yeah, it snowballs, doesn't it? It can do.
Yeah.
So I think it is important to work with people and get them to see the impacts of some of the things that have been written on the internet. And that can be really, really powerful, because I think you're changing people's behaviours towards each other. And that really does support young people to have a lot more respect and tolerance for each other. I think working with people that have maybe posted something at pace and at haste without thinking, and that's why we always say pause before you post, and think about the impact it's going to have. And you're right, it can create an absolute mountain that has to be overcome by the victim. And also it can bring so many others into the equation as well. Both on both sides, both for standing up sometimes for the victim, but also drawing people into negative behaviours as well. So I think there is a really important part of the process when we are addressing cyberbullying, and that is to not just support the victim, but also to address the behaviour with the perpetrator and prevent it from happening again.
Yes, because I can imagine that could be quite an overwhelming experience if you've just posted a comment, but you've realised that it's been misinterpreted, and then suddenly you've caused all this anguish.
Absolutely, and I think young people, they are young, and so they make mistakes, and that's how we learn in life. And I think the adults have a responsibility to when those mistakes are made, to make sure that we help them navigate through those mistakes and prevent them from happening again. And I think that's how we have more responsible digital citizens of the future, really.
Yes. You said, rightly so, a lot of our kids seem quite addicted to their phones. Do you find that excessive use of social media has a detrimental effect in the classroom? And can you tell if kids have been up late scrolling through their phones?
For me, it's pretty obvious when students are tired. And I think sometimes there might be reasons for that. I think parents, we try and do this at home, it should have rules about mobile phones and computers at bedtime. The blue light that's emitted from screens, and sometimes when I'm on screen, I wear these kind of blue light preventing glasses. And the reason for that is because blue light really disrupts the body's production of melatonin, and that hormone regulates sleep. Excessive kind of exposure to that can make it more difficult for children to fall asleep and stay asleep, and that leads obviously to sleep deprivation. And in a time when young people's bodies are changing and they need all the sleep they can get, there's a lot of research there around how much sleep teenagers do need. I think having access to a phone or a computer at bedtime in the bedroom, in bed, can make it really harder for children to detach from that constant stimulation of social media and the internet. And that can sometimes contribute to feelings of anxiety or stress. I think some of the rules that I'd probably say that would be important for parents, having a specific time when phones and computers must be turned off and put away, and wind down time, I think, is important. Having that time about an hour before bedtime. My son tends to charge his phone, or want to charge his phone, in his bedroom, and we'd probably insist on a common area away from the bedroom, so he's not tempted to kind of pick it up and carry on using it while he's trying to get to sleep, and encouraging probably other activities before bedtime, such as reading, writing diary, which I think is a pastime that children have forgotten, unfortunately, or kind of those relaxation exercises. I've seen some great sessions that I've seen delivered in school where people have been taught how to regulate their breathing so they can relax, which I think is really good. But again, I spoke at the top of the show about modelling healthy phone and computer use, and I think it's important for the adults to show that we do that as well. I think we've got one rule around mobile phones at the dinner table, which I think is really important. But I think for us as teachers, we can tell sometimes when students have got signs of fatigue or distraction or difficulty focusing in class. That might not always be factors around them staying up late on their mobile phones. There might be other factors as well. But that's where I think it's important that teachers communicate with parents around that adverse impact that tiredness and fatigue can have on performance in the classroom and academic performance overall. And linked to that is obviously children's wellbeing. I think educating students about the healthy use of technology is a really important part of the curriculum. And I know that we, as part of our personal development program here, have a really important element to that side of the curriculum that talks about balance within the digital and the real world.
Do you find that WhatsApp is a big distraction? I know when my son started school, he ended up being put into a whole class group on WhatsApp. So the phone was dinging constantly with messages. And that does seem to happen quite a lot with kids, that they're sending kind of one word messages to each other on WhatsApp. And it's just a constant flow of conversation between different kids.
I'd say from personal experience, we've got the mobile phone rule at JQA of not seen, not heard. And there's a lovely white line by the gate on Pope Street where students turn their phones off before they come into school. So we don't really hear the kind of pinging or the notifications that go off, because that rule of not seen, not heard is pretty much ingrained within the school's culture. I'd say, like the rest of us adults, a lot of children are in a lot of WhatsApp groups. If it's anything like the WhatsApp groups that I've got, then yeah, then potentially there are notifications that are going off all the time. And there is maybe a pressure on children to reply and to be part of the group. And I think that's just the same as it is for adults as well. And I think it's just another, symptom of children almost becoming more grown up than they need to be at this particular time. And I think WhatsApp is a really interesting one, because again, it's about connectivity and collaboration. And I've seen young people use it I've seen a study WhatsApp group, which has been really great, where people have posted different ideas around topics that they're looking at in subjects in the school, which is really great. And I think, again, like everything, it's about educating people to use it in the right way. And that's for me is really important.
So do you think it can actually be damaging for young people to be restricted from using social media? Say if a parent's really anti the idea of it and they're not letting their 15, 16-year-old use Instagram, TikTok or Facebook. Do you think that can impact on them as they go through life?
So I would say restricting a young person's access to social media can have quite short-term positive effects, but also as well negative effects. I think a lot depends on the individual circumstance. A blanket ban could provide kind of a safeguard immediately against the risks of social media use. So it certainly kind of prevents that risk of cyberbullying, exposure to inappropriate content, overuse as well. I think my daughter is on a digital detox at the moment, a self-imposed digital detox, I would say. And she's come off her phone for the whole week. And I think she said she's happier. She's more productive. Her room's tidier, she said. because it gives young people time to focus on other activities and interests. And I think spending time with friends and family, pursuing hobbies, developing other skills, that is an obvious benefit of not being on, you know, the phone glued in the hand. I'd also say it could be quite damaging for young people to be completely restricted from social media. It can limit their ability to connect with friends and peers, can access information a lot easier when you're on your mobile phone and connected. And I think one thing that we haven't really talked about is staying up to date with current events as well, and being in the know and knowing what's going on in the world. And I think sometimes without that information, it can lead to stunted real life conversations, one might say. And I think social media can also be quite a positive tool for self-expression. I think a lot of young people use Instagram. A lot of young people are getting very creative with TikTok, and they're building quite a positive online identity that almost showcases their own personal identity and or brand, one might say, as well. I think it's young people are much more tuned in now, who are quite adept at social media at that concept. I think young people, parents have to consider their individual needs and the maturity level when they're making a decision about whether to enforce a social media ban. Maybe instead of a complete restriction, parents might consider setting clearer boundaries, guidelines as well for their child's social media use. Time limits, I've found, can be quite useful. And obviously I talked earlier about monitoring as well. And also educating them about that responsible, positive, safe use of social media. I think parents have got to be really open and honest with their children about some of the reasons and decisions that they might make about blanket bans, and maybe reassess them having seen a more positive balance and an adjustment of the rules over time, and a kind of easing in and a walking with is certainly something that is going to support young people to be productive users of social media in the future, I think, because it's not something that is going to go away. It's not like tomorrow when all young people become adults that there's going to be no more social media. I know there are a lot of controversies around some of the platforms at the moment, in particular Twitter, and whether it's going to be around in the future or not. But I think it's here to stay, and we do need to educate our young people on how to not just live with it, but also use it in a way that's going to benefit them personally and the people around them.
So what would be perhaps your three pieces of advice for a parent whose child is on social media and the parent's feeling quite concerned about it? So they're already kind of in that field, and the parent doesn't really know what to do. Is there somewhere they can go, or somebody they can talk to?
I think three tips that I'd give would be to set clear boundaries and guidelines. Parents, I would say time limits are a real game changer, but sticking to them is really important. Making sure that they're restricted to only seeing age-appropriate content and demonstrating appropriate behaviour, I think that's important. Nothing wrong with picking up, your son or your daughter's phone and having a scroll through and having a look, just to check the child's activity and adjust the guidelines as necessary. I think the second thing I'd say is open and honest conversations. Parents have got to be really open with their child about the risks and the benefits of social media use. And I think schools will support that. And again, if you're unsure about how to approach some of those topics, what some of the risks might be on different platforms, again, get in touch with the school and speak to the safeguarding lead and talk to them about educating yourself around social media. And lastly, third tip I'd say is lead by example. Model those healthy social media habits. Limit your own usage. Be mindful of your own online presence. Not that I don't think young people use Facebook anymore. And I think a lot of people my age, Facebook is their social media platform of choice. I think young people would describe that as something that they wouldn't probably use. So it's very unlikely that our children would friend us or follow us on Facebook. But I think showing them some of the things that you might post and how you're respectful and kind and modeling that, kids learn from their parents, and I think modeling that is really important. So I think three tips would be clear boundaries and guidelines, open and honest conversations, and leading and modeling by example.
Yeah. I think the NSPCC has a lot of really useful information about social media as well, which is good. Just to end on a positive, I love what you were saying about how it can be used to create almost a young person's brand or identity. In some ways, it can be like a CV for them, can't it?
Absolutely.
So especially if they've got an interest perhaps outside of school.
Yeah, and I think for young people who are really creative, it can be so beneficial when used in that responsible and balanced way. The way that they use it positively, I've seen so many great examples. Connecting with others is probably the first one I'd say, where they've got really good collaborative opportunities to work with friends, classmates, communities that have got shared interests. Even if they're physically apart, you know, I've seen young people in social media groups or threads that where they're connected with people from across different communities and regions, you know, across the world, and they're all around a shared sphere of interest. And I think some young people are dedicated to wanting to become really, really good in particular fields, and they want to seek out experts, and they want to seek out like-minded people who have that kind of desire as well. So I think that's one way that I think young people have used it really well, is connect with others. I spoke before about finding information and getting access to information. That idea of using social media to be able to find out more on different topics can be really useful. I'd say there's a piece of work to be done, and I think more work needs to be done with the idea of fake news, because I think some young people can be susceptible to fake news, and I think that's something that that schools and parents probably will become a lot more of a focus over the course of the next few years. But staying up to date with current events, I spoke earlier about that idea of being in the know and having something to say, and self-expression is a really important part of social media. It can allow exposure of really creative skills. I've seen, you know, amazing dancers, young people, cooks, and I think people pursue their passions and showcase their talents through social media to quite a wide audience, and it does give them that exposure as well. Sports people I've seen do the same as well, which is really, really great. And I think that idea of entertainment, nothing wrong with that. I think that young people have a lot of pressure on them to achieve academically, to do really well in school, and we all need our downtime. And I think social media can be that really good source of entertainment for young people. Various platforms host a wide range of, you know, videos, music, games. I don't know where I'd be without my Spotify account, to be fair. And I think young people are using social media a lot more now to have that kind of healthy balance to, yes, the pressures of school and studies and academic achievement, but also as well balancing their own mental health, their own well-being, and they're doing that really, really well, I think. I'd say I've spoken previously about clear boundaries and guidelines, and families can support their young people to use social media in a really positive and empowering way by having those things. Open communication is really important, and talking and encouraging your child to use social media in a way that's maybe doing something that's showcasing their talents or promoting them in a healthy way, and that's really important. The balance is absolutely paramount. That balance between the on-screen life and the off-screen life, the digital and the real world, and encouraging people to spend as much time as possible off screen with friends and family. And the art of holding a conversation is absolutely still something that I think young people who were pretty much spending a lot of time at home during the lockdowns and do a lot of communication online. I think that that's something that we can encourage. And I think that modeling that positive behavior, families modeling how to be respectful online, how to be kind online, limiting their own usage, being mindful of their online presence and footprint. I think that's really important. But I think we've all got a role to play, schools, families, in harnessing this particular aspect of young people's lives for good, and encouraging them to use it in a way that enables them to get something good out of it, rather than being fearful of the negativity around it.
That's been really helpful. Thank you so much, Jamie. I love that message of being creative and kind on social media. I think that's really important. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Discover more about keeping your kids safe online on our Brummy Mummies Facebook and Instagram pages and on the Birmingham Live website. This is a Laudable production produced by Matt Millard. New episodes come out every fortnight, and you can sign up to our free newsletter to hear about the latest editions. Please subscribe and tell your friends about the podcast, and have a listen to our other episodes on education and mental health on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. See you next time.